So I'm here with Bill Miller Training. Hello, sir. Nice to officially meet you.
Nice to meet you.
But I have a gift for you first.
Oh, let's go.
What a better way than to consume our favorite forms of tea? Caffeine.
Let's go.
I will admit I'm a coffee amateur, but is that a iced coffee? Does that count?
Yeah, this is
A
awesome.
cold brew? Hopefully my roommate's not mad at me. I emptied our ice chest. So I got a cotton candy bang and Bill is a black coffee kind of guy, so
Yeah, I'll go with cream sometimes because black coffee tastes like crap, but lower calories, got to keep the fat off,
yeah. You know, you can't just be a good coach. You have to. I see you swinging it on your IG every now and again. So,
Yeah.
we're here from Talk Shop Podcast, sharing stories, lessons, and experiences in sports performance and professional development. So, as we were talking off air, because I always like saying that, so it makes this like FOMO. Everything's X's and O's, and Bill's never really talked on these topics that I'm going to ask him about, kind of more his background, his experiences, and but first, I want to share that I'm a fan of yours because you won me over, and I want to explain. So this is my own insecurity because I also create content and whatever. And when I first came across your stuff, you were like my competition. You're like near me, private guy, baseball guy. I played baseball in college, even though I don't want to like do baseball. And it was just high quality content over time, over time, over time. And then you won me over. So it's tough without getting that much feedback, like making content and stuff. But there are people that are watching, so I want to share a little story.
That's really interesting because I would say probably up until like COVID hit a couple years ago, I was very much the same way, like hyper competitive. And so if I saw somebody else that even if I liked what they were posting about, I was kind of like, screw this guy. Like I could do better. I could do better. Like that's how I always used to think. And
Yeah.
now I don't really care, but I do think like something that's always helped on social media, I'm very like non-abrasive. Like not on purpose. I'm just not an abrasive guy in any way. But I always felt like on social media, you see like assholes sometimes that like they'll just start a conversation just to argue. I've never been like that. And I think over time, that's why like I because I've known that story a lot. Like other people have told me similar things like, oh, I thought you're this super serious, like asshole kind of guy that was all about like science and stuff. And I'm not, I'm just like a goofball.
Yeah, just
So
here to have a good
I th
time.
yeah. And I think people see that over time when I don't really like comment back and get in these fights on Twitter and stuff like that,
Yeah.
So but yeah, I really don't like I love talking about training and stuff, but I don't really care to argue about it all that much, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
If you're doing something that's working for you, then I can't say anything wrong, or I can't say anything to you that's wrong, you know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah,
Yeah.
you'll have your own kind of preconceived notion of like what you think is right or whatever. And also like once you accumulate some sort of like little following, then that puts everyone like whose side am I gonna pick? It's just awkward for everyone. And it's like, I
Yep.
don't know. So I don't really do that anymore. I definitely had my fair share of like little Twitter beefs, but
Yeah, it's and you just realize how pointless it is because it consumes your whole day. And it's like I definitely started to think this way over COVID because it's like, wow, we are limited with our days, limited with the people that you're around, So it's just like you don't want to waste days pissed off at somebody that you'll probably never get to meet in real life,
yeah.
Like these people on Twitter suck sometimes.
Yeah.
Just let them suck.
Keyboard warriors for
Yeah,
sure.
exactly. So,
So I wanted to give you that little bit of feedback and a shout out just to the high quality stuff that you just
thank you.
consistently
Thank
put
you very
out.
much.
So
Yeah, and your stuff is outstanding as well. So,
thank
I
you,
think there's a
man.
lot of people that like don't come across and say it enough because I know
Exactly.
it
Like you
takes a
hit
lot of work.
post and then like this number of likes, maybe
Yeah, it takes a lot of work.
one
Yeah.
person might comment a fire emoji, but like that's not that helpful.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's it, it and it's just part of the game. So,
But
yeah.
I'm glad I don't feel as bad now that you're also competitive with the social media and stuff.
Yeah.
So I was in denial, but that was more of a reflection of me,
Mm-hmm.
not you. But Bill's the author of Swing Fast and Throw Fast, coaches a ton, starting to get some of your credit, being asked to speak on the Zach Dakin's Baseball Performance Summit. It's Dakin, not DeChamp. I've shared this story before. When I first met him, I was like, Zach DeChamp. He's like, it's Dakin. I'm like, oh man, this could not have gone worse. But to talk about something a little bit different, let's start with some very simple questions. Let's talk about your parents and your childhood. So, being the private side that we're in, it takes a very unique coach and mindset to make it happen and really maximize and crush it, kind of like you're doing. So, kind of start wherever you want to start, but like looking back now, how old are you?
30.
Okay, so Bill's 30, if you don't mind me asking.
No, you're good.
But like, have you ever thought back of like, oh, I learned that lesson in this moment. I learned that lesson in this moment, like these things that I believe in now. And we'll start there.
Yeah, so my parents were definitely very strict. I would say like my mom was the softer side, but it's very old school, like traditional, you know, Chicago family where the dad's the hardest. And, you know, so my dad was a scout for 40 years almost. And so he's in professional baseball and all that stuff. And the expectations are really high, especially on myself and my older brothers to be good at baseball. And we played football too. So there was a lot of like pressure. I mean, shoot, I think he threw us batting practice till he was like 60.
Oh my.
And it was like every day. Like if it was a day like today, like we were out at the field after school, he's throwing us batting practice for an hour and a half. And I really like looking back, I respect that, but off air, we had talked about it very briefly, but my older brothers didn't handle that type of pressure really well, especially in baseball, man. You know, it's like a game of failure.
Oh, yeah.
So you're taking 150 swings, 40 of those are probably going to be bad swings or miss hits or something like that. So it's just like every fifth swing, you're like, oh, crap. And then dad's saying, oh, shorten up your swing, kid, and all this other stuff. And I think I saw my older brothers not handle it so well all the time. They were very like battle back to my dad. They would always, you know, leave batting practice and walk home and stuff like that.
Which order were you of the
third?
So you're the youngest.
Yeah. And I actually have two younger siblings.
There's
but
five of you.
Yeah. But funny enough, they never really played sports.
Okay.
So they didn't really get into it. And I think it was because of how they saw how my dad was with sports.
It all comes together.
Yeah. So
it all comes together.
But yeah. So I was very like, I was very serious about training from a young age because like that's what we did for fun. Like it was, oh, hey, what are we doing this weekend? Are we going to go catch a Cubs game? No, we're going to go to the cages and hit and stuff like that. So it's kind of where I grew my love for training, but I definitely have learned some things along the way. Like just an hour ago, we were hitting off a machine, probably throwing like 90, 95. It's throwing gas. It's hard to hit. And instead of, you know, like getting on these kids because it was a bad swing or a miss hit or something like that, I'm very hands off now. And I've kind of tried to take the opposite approach that my dad did with me because I saw that even though I personally was able to sort of, you know, say, okay, dad, that's fine. Yeah. Like, you know, push it through one ear out the other, but my older brothers weren't able to do that. And I think it takes almost like a person that's very reflective to take mm-hmm. that negative information that you're getting from your dad or whoever and,
yeah.
you know, like just push it off to the side. Like you have to almost be conscious of it.
To say like, what's the truth? What do I believe in? What do I not believe in? What am I going to take away that's valuable? And what am I going to
leave? And yeah. why is my dad doing this to me? You know, why is he on my ass? You know,
yeah.
And so I think most kids, they're not able to be conscious of that in that moment, maybe because they don't see it happen elsewhere. They don't get to be in the audience for a second or two, like I was with my older brothers.
Mm.
So I was always a little bit nicer with my dad, and we have a great relationship today. My older brothers have a good relationship with them too, but it's taken years to kind of reform that. And it is an interesting thing, but I've taken a very opposite approach from my dad where, you know, I don't want kids to have to go through like dreading batting practice. Mm. They should be pumped up. And that's how we try to compete all the time. We try to make it fun. So that's just something I've kind of learned to be like the antithesis of my dad when it comes to like baseball training stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like it's almost more valuable, especially at that age, to learn what not to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like guess and check and kind of like accumulate what you don't like. And then that just like process of elimination, like your style and whatnot. So like, was there a moment, or do you remember a specific, like a post-game blowout in the car or like a cussing match where like you felt like you were on the fence and you like made a decision? Does that make sense?
Yes. And this is an interesting story. So when I was a kid, I believe I was a seventh grader, and I was the seventh grader that hadn't like hit their growth spurt yet. So I'm, you know, playing football in the fall, but it was maybe a little bit later, about, you know, maybe mid end of September. And it was a gorgeous day out, and we had a really short practice with our team. Now, there was another team that had some eighth graders and some freshmen, because at the time, the one local public school didn't have a freshman football team.
Oh.
So they came to our park to play, and they allowed them to play. And these kids are huge compared to
me.
Yeah. So I'm a seventh grader, and, you know, like Man, my dad and I are walking out from practice and we see them, they're doing Oklahoma dive drill.
Ugh.
And so for those of you listening who don't know what that is, it's basically three or four people line up in a very short window and just bash their head into each other. It's not a safe drill. I don't condone it. I've been out of football for years, so I don't even know all the safe tackling techniques that are, you know, should
never,
be taught.
Never got taught to you.
Yeah, it definitely didn't get taught to me, that's for sure. But yeah, so they're doing Oklahoma dive drill and it's a fairly small park. So everybody's watching it. That's like walking around, they're being loud and obnoxious. And I'm watching and I mouth something off like, oh, I could definitely kick their ass or something, you know, just being a little cocky kid.
Yeah, of course.
And so I'm walking out with my dad. He's like, oh, you think you could? Then go over there and do it. And so at the time in my head, I'm like, uh-oh, I just got called out. Like I got to either like quote unquote man up or, you know, not. And so there's multiple routes that I could have gone with this. Like I could have said, no, dad, I'm not going to do this to please you. Like I am confident in myself. I could have said that. And I think that would have been a very appropriate response that I would have been proud of today if I'd said that. Mm. But I didn't. I took like the opposite and I knew I was scared because I knew I was going to get my ass kicked. But I actually like walked over there and in the back of my mind, I'm saying, oh, they're probably just going to say, no, kid, go home. But they're like, yeah, join in.
Oh, and plot twist.
And it was on. And dude, so the very first one, I got to line up at linebacker. Other kid had the ball and there was two kids blocking each other in the middle. And he picked right. I picked right. And I smoked him. Like I didn't put him on his back, but I like popped him and popped his head up a little bit.
How much bigger was he?
He was about 6'2", 6'3", and I was like 5'6". Like I was like a little tank. Like I was built the same, but just a short little guy. And, you know, so not fast or anything, but I guess like I got the low leverage on him and I just smoked him right in the chest. And so I remember that. I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. But then that kid got really pissed off. And the next one, I got the ball.
Uh-oh.
And he drove me into the ground. And he was like doing the thing where they like kick their legs, driving you into the ground. Like he smoked me and just embarrassed me. But that it felt like we did that for like an hour and a half. It was probably only like 5-10 minutes, but it was such an invigorating feeling in that. Like we did that and we just kept bashing into each other back and forth. And I like held my own. So it was like at the time, you know, looking back on it, I maybe didn't make the perfect decision, but I did it because I was like, I have to overcome this fear. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to just say like, if I get knocked on my ass or if they laugh at me or whatever, it doesn't matter. Like you have to make decisions. Don't say, no, I'm not going to do that because I'm scared. Say, no, I'm not going to do that because I'm not afraid of you. You know what I mean? Mm. And so I wound up going and doing the terrible Oklahoma dive drill and probably lost some brain cells.
Because you opened your mouth first.
Yeah. And so that was the other part of it. Like if I would have just been quiet and, you know, not popped off, I would have gone home and did my homework. But, you know, I was mouthing off and now it's okay. Time to like live up to it or, you know, whatever. And so I guess that like, the reason it was such an important moment for me is because I did remember, okay, now I'm going into high school and you have to have more of a fearless approach. And I know it sounds machismo and stuff like that. And I'm not saying like I started fights or anything like that, but there is something to be said for if you're scared walking down the halls, if you're scared of everybody around you, or, you know, if you're always afraid of your own shadow or afraid that you're going to fail, like you're not going to make it in anything. Let alone sports, which was my passion at the time. So that was a big thing. Like I definitely think I sort of grew up a little bit. I became more confident after that because it's like, all right, if I do go and try to hit this kid as hard as I can, and he knocks me on my ass, at least I tried, you know? So I did take that away from that day, but it's just a day that stands out. And I think about it like all the time still.
Yeah.
Very interesting story. Yeah. Not one that I recommend that you go and do. I don't recommend, you know, lowering your head and hitting someone in the chest as hard as you can, but
it is interesting looking back. And the reason why, so you're the first guest that I've asked those questions. So you crushed it, but the whole like nature versus nurture, and like, we can all have grew up in similar neighborhoods and high schools and da da da, but like, it's crazy to think those like singular moments that looking back was like such a huge deal, which we'll get to about your career, but I guess last kind of question is more on the entrepreneur or like businessy side. As we've kind of discussed, just the private side being its own beast in and of itself. So like myself, for example, I was the best popcorn salesman in Boy Scouts.
Mm-hmm.
I got first place twice and third place once, but who's counting? And like the Pinewood Derby cars, if anyone has done like Boy Scouts or Cub Scouts, did you do that?
No, I did not.
So there's this block of wood, and then you'd have to like carve a car out of it.
Okay.
And I would win like most colorful, most creative, third place, da da da. So it's like these like kind of entrepreneurial, like your chance to like make it your own. I just have like a few memories kind of that. So like whether it was something extracurricular or businessy or just like anything that would lead you to have the mindset to be as successful as you've been in the private side.
Yeah, I guess when it comes to like business for me, I started out like, so I guess a little fork in the road moment for me was to decide to like stop trying to play baseball. I played a little bit of independent ball.
So I played 4 years college, 2 years independent.
Yeah. And I got released three times actually, which is incredible to do that in 2 years.
World record right there.
Yeah. But so indie ball, like I tried my best. I trained as hard as I could, but I just wasn't very good at it. So when it came time, I just turned 25 that winter, 24, 25. I honestly can't even remember now, but either way, I remember making that decision of like, okay, I either keep trying to do the summer ball thing and play in the Chicago Suburban League, the men's league that's out here, and keep trying to do that and then coach a little bit on the side, or you just go all in on coaching. And so I made that decision to go all in on coaching that winter and cut playing baseball, like just cut it out of your life. You'll get used to it. It sucks because you're used to hitting and training every day.
Do you remember that moment of like, I'm done playing?
Yeah.
Like
it was January 6th that year.
Oh.
And so I had a tryout after the new year. I believe it was like January 3rd or something like that year. It was on a Saturday. And I remember January 6th. I believe it was either that Monday or Tuesday after that tryout. And I got the email back saying, hey, we're not going to sign you for spring training. We'll keep your number around in case anything comes up.
Just BS.
Yeah, just the same old crap they sent to everybody. But and so I remember just saying, you know what, if the Traverse City Beach Bums don't want me, I doubt the Slammers or the Boomers
if,
or anybody.
If I can't be a beach bum.
Exactly. Yeah. So that I remember that day. I remember waking up to that email, and because I was gonna go out for to face a pitcher throwing live at bats. He was going out in the minor leagues, so that was like his first day throwing back that off season. And I told him, hey, sorry, I'm not going to make it. And I just, from that day, I just put my bats in the garage, and I haven't really touched them since. Wow. I mean, I'll bust them out once in a while now, but So that, I remember that day, it was a tough day. And then, so I actually went out and coached. I was like an assistant at a, like a volunteer assistant, not even on staff getting paid, at a Division II school.
Which one?
Angelo State, actually. So I had a connection to go all the way out to West Texas.
We almost played them in the World Series.
They're crazy talented. Yeah. And so I had a connection with their baseball coach, actually, to go out there and help out coaching I didn't coach the baseball team. I was just in the
weight room. From Chicago to Texas to volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And it was kind of like not a crisis moment, but you know, like one of those things like, okay, I'm going to get it away from this as much as I can just to like not have the urge to play baseball anymore, not to do anything baseball related. And I was actually, I worked with the baseball team in the weight room a little bit, but I was working with a lot of different sports, all volleyball and golf and stuff like that. And so I remember at that point I'm working with them, and I wasn't really happy with being like, I felt cooped up in the weight room at the time. So I remember coming back and saying, you know, I think I want to be a private sector guy. I want to work in baseball primarily and that sort of thing. So I made that decision coming back home that summer to start working at a baseball facility. And so another fork in the road that came up was, you know, we're training all these like travel ball teams. And I feel, I don't know about how you feel, but I feel travel ball is a scam.
Oh, yeah.
I felt the place I was at was ran by a scam artist. I felt what we were doing was like criminal. Like these people are paying thousands and thousands of dollars for like what we said was top-notch training. And they come in like once a week, maybe.
Oh, for sure.
And they're just like, they're getting the same daddy ball front flips. And, you know, like we had no real equipment at the time. We had like some dumbbells that we could do lunges with. And, you know, you're not getting the best training that you could. And
very just put together.
And so I knew it. And a handful of the kids that were on those travel ball teams knew it. And so I actually still train.
How old were they?
At the time, they were like freshman, sophomore in high school. Now they're in college. One kid actually, he's out, he just played independent ball this summer, but either way, it was cool to see like those handful of kids, they actually stuck with me because they wanted to come in extra for training and stuff like that. And so I remember saying like, I feel so much more fulfilled training just these handful of kids than these masses of travel ball teams that most of these kids don't even want to be here anyways.
Yeah.
So I remember making that decision that summer too, that like, whatever I have to do to make these ends meet so that I can train serious athletes, like whether they're good or not, they sucked. Now they're okay. They've gotten better over the years, but back then they sucked. And it was like, I was fine with it because they were serious. And so if I'm going to pour in all this work and energy training guys, I want to see some payoff.
Yeah.
So that's really what I decided at the end of that summer. And it took years to be able to get away from having to coach on the field because you're trying to make ends meet, or having to coach these travel ball teams or these camps because you need extra money. And so that's eventually where I wound up deciding just, hey, you got to write a book. You got to get some, you know, side money in, multiple streams of revenue. That's what it's called.
It's like millionaires have like seven streams of income.
Yeah. And I guess I have two, but I'll take it, you know? But yeah, so I really had to make that decision of like, I'm not going to take this easy money that I know, like, just keep printing out cash year after year because kids all have to play travel ball now just to play baseball. So I got away from that, and I'm very happy that I did, because now, you know, I've eventually, you know, wound up moving to this facility where I just rent space. I get to train whoever I want, as many athletes as I want, you know, in the time slots that I've rented, and I get to go home.
Yeah.
You know, that's, to me, that's living the dream that I wanted, you know, a few years ago back when this all started. So.
Yeah, that's sweet. So it was Texas to be like a SMC volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
And then came back to the homeland, Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So what was that beginning like? Or like, did you have any coaching experience prior to Texas?
Like I had helped out at like a baseball camp once in a while, like that typical college, like the college kid that just holds a radar gun and, you know, he's just doing it to make like 20 bucks and then he goes and hits in the cage. That's pretty much what I did prior to.
Okay. So you hopped right into the private side.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the first private side spot? So now it's like literally all you just rent.
Mm-hmm.
Were you with a business before to where you were more of an employer? Was it always just Bill Miller Training?
No, yeah, I was with that employer. I won't now drop the name because I've already called them a scam. but yeah, so it was, we had like a travel ball team out of a facility, and we had about a dozen teams, maybe a little more, that would all come in consistently for training. But it was like, we have so many teams that can only come in like once a week, you know? And then, you know, some guys are given lessons on the side. I was training a handful of my own guys on the side and stuff like that. That's pretty much what I did for a couple years there until I moved here. So, yeah.
So then next, so there were a few fork in the road moments you kind of shared. So what would be the coolest story, or like one that, that you always like tell in a bar, just like you couldn't even make it if you tried?
Oh man. I don't know, that we always have like weird, random, funny things happen. Like at that old facility, it was kind of a dump. And like the walls were like paper thin and stuff like that. So, and the cages all had holes in it. So there was one, there's a guy that he played a little bit in the big leagues this year named Jack Sawinski. There one day Jack hit a ball and it went through the net and cracked the window. It's like, oh shit. All right. Well, it's one window. We'll be fine. And then he didn't put pine tar in his bat, or he didn't put enough on. And so the windows are up here behind him. And then there's like a net. Like, so it should be hard to hit unless you really pull one. He takes his bat, misses the ball, throws his bat, and it goes through the window. And he broke like four windows that day.
Oh my God. So the bat went through the
net.
Through the net and then through
and then smoked the windows. And So I remember that day. That's
a big league right there.
But like we would break stuff all the time. It's just like things always fell apart. But I guess, well, speaking of which, the coolest, not cool story. If you could imagine a room sort of like this that has like, you know, ceiling tiles, there was a loft area up by the windows at the other end of the facility, loft area where it has like the AC units and stuff like that. And so I'm in there recording a video one morning and I keep hearing like funk, boonk into the window. And it's a bird that got stuck. And so we kept, it was like a day like this, and we had the garage door open. So a bird must have flown in when nobody was looking and got stuck. And I'm a huge sucker for animals, like anything nature related, like I'm all in. Like if I see like a bird or whatever that's struggling, I'm going to go help them out. So I climb up into the loft area and I'm like tiptoeing, make sure I don't break anything. The windows are like rusted shut. So I'm like trying to like elbow it. And do we got to switch out? Or?
In like 3 minutes.
Okay. And so I'm like elbowing and elbowing. And finally I go really hard. My right foot goes through like a ceiling tile. My left leg catches on a 2x4 and my knee just like caves in. And then it was a crazy injury. Like this is super rare, but I tore my MCL. Nothing else.
Oh.
No, like maybe a little bit of a meniscal tear showed up on the MRI, but it was almost all MCL. And so the bird flies right out over my head and that bird was fine.
Oh my
but
God.
Yeah, so I tore my MCL and I wound up going down through the ceiling tile that I had broken. And like I get down to the floor and I'm like, man, I kind of hurt my knee. My elbow's bleeding a little bit. And I'm like, you know,
you fell through the ceiling.
Yeah, but my leg got caught. So if you can imagine, one leg fell through the ceiling, the other leg got caught and it just kind of bent like that.
Oh.
And so like one leg's like dangling through. And then I eventually like worked my way down and just fell onto the floor. But so the craziest part is I was like, man, there was only one other kid in the facility at the time. Like he had just gotten there. And I'm like, no, dude, I'm fine. Like, I'm just going to test it out. I think I hurt my knee a little bit, but I'm all right. I ran like 3 full speed sprints, completely fine.
Oh.
And then about 10 minutes later, like that wave of adrenaline or whatever fell off and everything hurt. Like my neck hurt. My knee is throbbing and like swelling up like a balloon. So I'm like, I think I did hurt my knee pretty bad actually. So that happened a couple years ago. But yeah, that was a crazy, crazy day. And so like, I always tell the story because like, I don't know. I don't think about this consciously all the time, but like once in a while, I'll just joke. Like, I know how I'm going to die, guys. I'm going to be up on a ladder or up on a roof and I'm going to fall off and die. So I'm going to stay off from doing that till I'm like 80. I never go up on ladders anymore.
Trying to help the baby birds or something.
Yeah. I never go up on rooftops anymore. I never go up on ladders anymore because I know that's how I'm going to fucking die. So
I feel like that's such a private side thing. Like, we have 4 big garage doors, 2 of them are glass.
Yeah.
And you'll every now and again, you'll just be like coaching near it and you'll just hear a thud.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, what was that? And then like later, like little Johnny walks in and goes, there's a dead bird outside. You're just like, oh, great.
Yep.
So literally we bought one of those fake owls.
Oh, okay.
Put it on top
of
the building. Yeah.
Genius.
I don't know. Like, I think it's helped,
mm-hmm.
but the backside of TC Boost is like woods.
Okay.
So we'll get like little snakes and stuff and,
gotcha,
and whatever.
Gotcha.
And my boss/mentor's daughter is huge into like bugs and insects and all that stuff. And I am not, but I can't kill it because then he'll like shame me for killing this bug. So I have to like act like I'm not like scared. And like, you know, when I'm the adult training like high schoolers, middle schoolers, I'm the adult, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So question that I kind of had prepared, the most full circle kind of proud moment that like might choke you up a little bit.
I think there's some stories that are still sort of unfolding. Like I had alluded to some of these guys that I had been training from that old facility from the time when they were like, you know, young high school kids, you know, 5 years later now, you know, how are they doing? And some of them have wound up quitting baseball and stuff, and that's normal. That's fine. I don't ever fault them for it. But I think, 4 of them are still with me now. Like I've been with them since the start of their training career and they're all doing really well.
That's crazy.
It's really cool to see. Cause it's like, you know, we talk about training and stuff like that all the time. And it's easy to get lost in like the minute, like day to day, like, oh man, Stags really didn't hit well. He hasn't been hitting well the last 2 weeks, man. Maybe I'm screwing him up as a coach and stuff. But like, if you look at what Stags' swing or what Neil's swing or what Luke's swing looked like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, it's night and day different. And I think I've definitely learned to take that type of approach more often lately because in baseball, especially, you're going to fail. You're going to go through slumps and it sucks. And you're going to have to figure out ways to overcome those, you know, failures and stuff. And that's very important. But I think far too often there's kids who like to program hop and stuff. And I've definitely learned over the years, like if there's somebody coming for me, like let's say this has never actually happened, but let's say there's a kid from TC Boost who's maybe unhappy with the training and he wants to come to Bill Miller training. Or I know it's the, I've had the opposite where other people are like, hey, this kid used to train with you. What the hell did you do wrong with him? but so that happens all the time. And a lot of times those situations are because the kid's been with you maybe a month and he didn't see his fastball go from 80 to 85.
Dude, oh my.
It's so frustrating.
I don't know where these like kids and parents are getting these expectations. Like one kid came in and then they did the eval and the dad goes, all right, he has a showcase in 4 weeks. We'll see you once a week. And how is 60 drops as if we'll keep training? You're going to give me four sessions to make your kid an Olympic sprinter?
Exactly. Like, exactly. It's so ridiculous. And if that's how training worked for somebody on social media, that's fine. It does happen where you'll see those insane gains, but 9 times out of 10, those happen either because the kid is just like so untrained from the start and he's like already kind of freakish in some way. Like in baseball, this happens all the time. You get a kid that's a 15-year-old, never trained before, 6'4", lanky, whippy kid. He does some strength training and throws as hard as he can for a month. Yeah. His velo goes up 5 miles per hour. Just of course it did.
Newbie gains.
Yeah. Newbie gains. And his body is ready to throw heat. Like it's he's just so long and so whippy and so wiry. Like it's going to happen. But like, yeah, it's ridiculous because you will see posts like that. And I don't fault people for posting it. I don't fault people for making those rapid gains. That's awesome. That's cool. But I definitely have like grown up over the years to not be enamored by that because it's so unrealistic. And the true test of how good of a coach we are or how good of the training is, it's going to be about the years of development. There's nobody that you see playing on TV that got there in 1 year or 2 years or 3 years. It's taken 10, 12, 15 years for all of those guys from the time that they were, you know, first starting to train at age 12 to be on TV at age 26, 27. And so that's something like I've been trying to be more vocal about that lately of like, this is what this kid did over an 18-month span. You know, that's what I like to talk about in terms of like progress and, you know, where this kid came from to now. It don't expect it to be 4 weeks. That's ridiculous. But yeah, so I guess as far as like full circle stories, it's cool to like see that, hey, like this kid has been with me. And so now as a coach, I feel definitely more confident because it's like, hey, if I know you might be struggling right now, you may have had a bad 2 week stretch and that made your whole season bad because seasons are so short in baseball sometimes, but it's like, hey, if you stick with it for 3-4 years, you could be like Staggs. You could be like this kid who's playing pro ball now and stuff like that. So it's cool to like show these stories, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess another like full circle sort of story is like, as far as like being a coach or a businessman or whatever you want to say, like whatever I'm doing, it is cool to see because I remember that summer when I came back from Texas and I made that decision of like, I want to work with baseball players. I remember saying it to somebody, multiple people, actually. I'm like, you know, because Eric Cressy, obviously, was just getting like really big at the time. And there was a handful of other guys, like, you know, we had talked about Zach Dakin off of off air and a handful of other ones that I was like very like I looked up to them. And I'm like, I want to be like them. They're human beings. Yes, Eric Cressy is probably the smartest person you or I could ever come across. Crazy knowledge.
Talk about like shoulders, like it's everyday language is
insane. And I could never actually be like him. I knew that. Like I would never be like Cressy. I didn't ever want to copy him, but I wanted to be well respected like that, you know? And just if there was a conversation of 20 coaches, they wouldn't look at Bill and be like, oh, this guy's a, you know, like I just want to be part of the conversation. That's what I always wanted to be. So yeah. I guess the Baseball Performance Summit was like a really cool sign of that, that Zach had asked me, hey, I want you to make a presentation on this thing that I feel that you're an expert in. I was like, that's so cool. Cause it shows that, hey, like the stuff that you do, the social media game is a tough one, man.
It's tough with the lack of feedback.
Yeah. And it's tough too, because it's like, I feel like everywhere you look, whether it's social media, YouTube, just regular media like TV and radio, everybody's always trying to sell something. And don't get me wrong, I'm trying to sell stuff too. Like I try to sell my book all the damn time because I need to make ends meet. But I think there's a sort of disingenuous, or I don't even know if I would use that word, but like being a salesman doesn't always come across like it. And people are always trying to say like things like, oh, this kid gained 8 miles per hour of throwing velocity in 3 weeks with us. Like, and you know, in the back of your mind that you're sort of lying.
Yeah. How do you fully, like, I saw this one, like vertical jump basketball thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was like adds 9 to 15 inches plus in 8 weeks, all caps guaranteed.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's no way you actually believe that.
Right. And that gets tons of clicks. That gets tons of love. And it drives in business. I'm sure they met their end goal by lying. Mm-hmm. And I did consciously think about, like, okay, if I'm going to approach the social media thing, I don't ever want to be viewed as a liar. I don't want 20, 30 comments in the comment section saying that this is a scam. I never want to be associated with that. Yeah. And so, you know, seeing the growth on social media, it took years and years.
Very long time, yeah.
You know, it took a lot of years. It was never like a rapid, you went from 1,000 to 10,000 in a year type of thing. Or, you know, I don't even get that much love on social media, you know? So it's just like, you know, you put in a lot of work for a very small incremental gain over time, but that is much more rewarding than, you know, you made that one pop off post that everybody you know, loved, and that's how you got all your fame. I've never wanted that. And I honestly never care to be famous or anything like that. It's a pain in the ass.
Be well respected, have people like Zach reach out.
Yeah.
I might think about this way too much because I have no hobbies, and you know, it's like, oh, I make videos. It's like, that's a job. It's like, oh, well, I have a podcast. That's a job, you know?
Yeah.
But because it's so saturated now, the only things that are going to get people's attention is the sensational stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it'd be different coming across like Bill Miller stuff because that one kid hit 100 and SportsCenter reposted it. So then you're like associated with that one viral video versus kind of how you won me over was just like more consistent stuff over time. It's like you're not going away and it's high quality stuff. So might as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's how it should be, and almost being sold on, you can blow up overnight and all that stuff. It's like, would I really want that though? Like, how many actual fans would I get from that?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So I guess as we're on I want to backtrack about the like expectations and parents and training and stuff. So the joke that we have is if I see a kid twice a week for 6 weeks, that's like a very good athlete. So just like training and being able to retain clients that long on the private side, it's just absolutely wild. And speaking with the ups and downs, and this happened yesterday, one of my favorite moments is when a kid runs a slower time and I go like that. I was like, that was your best rep by far. I like that one. They're like, it was slower. I was like, well, how did it feel? They're like, oh, it felt better, but it was slower. I was like, can you become a better sprinter without always running faster? They're like, yeah, I can. It's like, all right, perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why do you think every single sprint is going to be faster? You'd be running a zero eventually.
Yeah.
You know, so then it's like coaching them through the development process as well.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point, actually.
Might be a baseball saying, tell me if you've heard this one, where it's like, I was a pitcher, and it's like, you only have your A stuff, let's say a third of the time, and then B stuff and C stuff, but the good players make their B stuff A stuff somehow, and then make their C stuff B stuff.
Yep.
So it's like, can they get in the right mind space of, I'm going to have bad workouts, good workouts, and average? Well, you need the average ones to appreciate the good ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then if everything was great, then it'd all be average. And then you need the bad ones to appreciate the average ones, you know? So it's like, yes, you should be doing everything you can, but like being able to look an athlete in the eye and go, today was just like an okay workout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you've been crushing it for a while.
Yeah.
So it's a testament to like the relationships that you've been able to make. And I'm sure going from those monster clubs to the private side, it's so much different.
Oh yeah, big time. Yeah, and I think too, like one thing this just happens, like I'm always laughing. Like I probably have laughed every single day in here since I've gotten here, you know.
You'll live forever.
Yeah, and
don't go on a ladder.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I'm always laughing. I smile a ton and stuff like that, and I don't consciously do it. It just happens. But
you have a Mean Mug profile picture, by the way.
Exactly.
You've had the same one since I first
even thought to change it. I guess I should change it now. There, I'll screenshot that, and all that's right, going to be my profile picture next week or whenever this comes out. But yeah, so, but I do think like having that more laid backish approach has lended itself well to like baseball guys. They're going to have those bad days
in their head. Yeah.
Yeah. And just seeing a coach that's like, oh man, you sucked that round.
Yeah.
Like that, I think, sort of helps them get over themselves a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
But it is, it's a challenging thing because I do have high expectations of them as well. And I want them to do well, and I want them to get that 110 exit velo and all that other stuff. But it like wanting it and it happening, it's not going to be instant.
Yeah.
And it does take many, many months and years of training, that's for sure. But yeah, I do take a very laugh, goof around, like laid back approach. And I think a lot of the kids enjoy that. Like,
oh, for sure. And that's something that we talk about as a staff at TC Boost is like, the most value that we can provide, is it being that hardo? No, they have seven other coaches doing that. Is it pointless volume, et cetera, et cetera? So it's like, we have to fill in the gaps, and it happens to be the more fun gaps anyways. Mm-hmm. But it's like high quality training, walk out of the facility feeling better than when they walked in. Like it was, what's today, Friday? On Wednesday, a high schooler of mine, really fast baseball guy, he'll go D1 for sure. He was like, I just always feel really good after our sessions. I'm like, awesome. We warm up, we jump, we sprint, we lift like three sets of mm-hmm. lower, upper, and just like get in, get out.
Yeah.
Like I want you feeling good and popping explosive. I'll let your coaches run you to death.
Yeah.
So it's like, when was the last time they like whiffed in the cage and one of their actual coaches like laughed and like tried to make fun of them?
Yeah.
They probably just berated them.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly.
So it's a fun opportunity to provide more value to the athlete. That's just more fun in general.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, it's like this kind of ties right back into the very first story that we were talking about, like with my parents, especially. It was like, okay, you swing and miss, you whiff. And this happens with all the kids. And maybe not so much anymore because some of them are old enough now to where they don't look at me for approval. Mm-hmm. I see it a lot with, there's a really talented young kid. Whiff, swing and miss, gets jammed.
And look at the coach.
They see that we make eye contact. And if they see me like pissed off or like this, that automatically is going to make their next five reps suck. I guarantee it.
Mm.
But if they see me like, hey, you're all right, get this one, come on, man. If they see me do that, then they're fine.
Yeah.
Like it almost like it's happened so often. It especially happens with like new kids that I've never really like trained before, which I don't have too many of them anymore. But once in a while, you get a new kid that comes in and yeah, like this batting practice we do is tough, man. Like you miss a lot. Like the machine is tough, or if I'm throwing, I'm trying to get you out and stuff. Yeah, like 75, blow it by you, man. But no, so like we make it tough, and they'll look at me like I will make eye contact, and I definitely always want to make sure that what they are looking at is not something that's going to make them worse in their next reps. So. Yeah. I do think that laughter, that laid back approach is very important because like you said, they're going to go to their high school coach and they're going to see this and they're going to see this, if you know, stuff like that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had kids who like hang cleans, like just three. First one, look at me. Second one, I'm just like, homie, can you like, yeah, I'm here to coach and like, but like do your thing and I'll hop in when it's necessary.
Yeah.
But just like if a kid does a sprint, I'm like, that was so bad. That was literally so bad, you know? And then like, you just like laugh and smile. They're like, oh, okay. You know, like to see kids crack is such a good moment, you know? Cause they're so used to like with travel and all this stuff. And it's just so like locked in all the time
mm-hmm.
where it's like, it's a fine line of something I'm still learning, but like, you have to like let the leash go a little bit
mm-hmm.
because it's so tight everywhere else, but you still have to train. But it's definitely like a line I'd rather fight than like what's too hard versus mm-hmm. like the right amount of hard. But so I guess next, I would want to ask about what it's like writing a book or two books
mm-hmm.
and next kind of like where you get your ideas and your inspiration for just like making kind of content in general, kind of being a one man show over here.
Well, as far as the books go, writing a book is tough. And it was definitely something like you got to let go of your ego because you're probably going to misspell a word or something's not going to make sense to somebody at some point. Who cares? You know, like if they don't like it, it's fine. Like
self-published?
Mm-hmm. Well, so the first one went through Amazon and I went through their like an Amazon actual like, you know, editor and stuff like that. That was Swing Fast. The other one was all me. Like mm-hmm. I didn't want to pay for Amazon.
E-I-L-2-2-L?
Yeah, but no, so like with the books, it was definitely something I had to just sort of like rip off the band-aid and just say I have dozens of pages written up, like just go and do it, like go and try to make the best thing that you can. And if they like it, great. If they don't like it, it's all right. I'll live. And so like I did have to do that with the first one. And then the second one, I kind of had a hunch that it would be fine. But even then, like, you know, people are very like finicky when it comes to throwing. They have their own ideas of, no, this is the only right way to throw a baseball, and use how you pronate and all this other crap. And it's just like, no, man, like if you had it all figured out, then you would be training only big leaguers, you know, after 5 years, because you just had the perfect formula. So I had to take that understanding into it, that I'm giving my unique approach that I've learned over the years. And if somebody doesn't like it, it's because they haven't experienced what I've experienced, not because I'm wrong, you know? Yeah. And so I think when you start to look at it through that lens, things get a little bit easier for you. It's still tough, but releasing a book especially gets a little bit easier. But as far as like, where have I learned stuff from and who do I try to mimic and stuff like that over the years, I have to give credit to Chris Beardsley. I give credit to him all the time, and I could never give him enough credit, because he's probably like one of the smartest people in strength and conditioning that doesn't get talked about a lot. And he's very like research based everything. And the one book, especially Strength is Specific, was like a big pivotal one for me, because, you know, not to get into X's and O's, but I started to learn things like strength isn't the end all. It's about speed development. Whatever you do, strength training, speed training, middle ground training, whatever it is, it has to translate to speed on the baseball field and performance on the baseball field. So just having that like shift in thought, because when I was first coming up, it was all West Side Barbell. It was all, if you're big and strong, you hit ball far. Like, and so I have to give credit to him, because the moment that the switch turned is when social media content for me started to change too, because it wasn't just the same old front rack, reverse lunge, sets of five. It wasn't that robotic stuff anymore. I don't even post the weightlifting. We do plenty of lifting, don't get me wrong. I don't even post about it much because it's not interesting to me. It's not nearing the end goal, which is making guys explosive and better baseball players. So I have to give credit to him, because that's probably what's helped me stand out on social media a lot. But as far as like who I try to like mimic, Max Schmarzo is a good one. Him and I don't talk as much as we used to. I should probably shoot him a text, because he's a Destiny. Cool dude. Yeah, he's a cool dude. And I know he's a busy guy as well, but the way he approaches social media is very like free. Like he doesn't have this expectation of like, oh, I need to post this and this at the same time every day and stuff like that. And he does sell his things, like go for it, have at it. If you're selling stuff, go for it. But at the same time, it's very it's a very unique approach to social media. He's more thoughtful with the things that he says. And there's other guys like that as well, but he's one that I do try to look at like, oh, I see what Max is doing there. Maybe I'm going to try doing something like that for baseball. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I like the experiment. So like how we describe it is like there's four categories of social media: highlight your athletes, entertain, innovate. But I think experiment is probably a better term, and educate.
Yeah.
So I think I'm more in the education. Every now and again, I'll highlight, I'll try to make a funny one. And then sometimes I'll mess with my experiments, but mainly the educate. So I think your experiments, or at least what's viewed as experiments to everyone else, like no one has really standardized measuring med balls.
Yeah, yeah.
No one's really standardized using a crane scale and kind of stuff like that. So it's like, but also documenting that process, I think is super interesting. And like watching those kind of evolve throughout against my will, just always consuming your stuff. But next, like, where is Bill Miller training going next?
I'm going home.
Going home?
I'm going to go home and eat some lunch. No, but I guess as far as like a business perspective goes, like, I know I should think longer term, and I know my wife would, you know, doesn't like that I think so short term, but I'm really just thinking about like what's happening next week, you know, who's going back to school and stuff like that. It's really hard to, for me at least, to think what is this all going to look like in 4 years, 5 years? Am I going to hire on people, or what am I going to do? Like, I just have no idea. And so instead of that, I try to always like give the Bill Belichick answer, which is just like, oh, we're on to Cincinnati. I'm going home for lunch. Yeah.
One game at a time.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess if I had my way, 100% my own way, things would be the exact same as what I did this last week. Guys come in, they train, we did all of our things that we needed to do. My arm is still hanging on after throwing hundreds of balls off the mound, and that'll be it. But I know things will change eventually. I don't know exactly where they're going to go, but I do try to give myself credit for that. Like, I've always been very good at sort of wiggling my way through crap. You know, if we need to pay something off at the end of the year, I'll figure out how to wait, you know, make a couple extra $1,000 or this or that. Like, I'll figure out things that I needed to do from a business perspective if I needed to. But if I had my way, it's the exact same way that it's been. this is a great summer. Like, seriously, it was super packed. It was super busy, but I got home like a good, like I got home by like usually 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay. Got to spend a lot of time with my wife and stuff like that. So if I had my way, it would be exactly like that. But I know things will always change and stuff like that. So we'll see.
Well, shout out to that, because I definitely have too long-term of a mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And I've recently started to figure out from my childhood, like why that is, why I'm so impatient, as that's one of my many flaws. But like, everything was so objective and short-term. What grade did I get? Project. It was so like clear. What was success? What was not? It was very like numerical.
Mm-hmm.
And now like the private side, you can literally make whatever you want to make it. And it doesn't happen as fast as like you'd hope.
Yeah.
Whether it's like social media growth or whatever, like, so I can get lost in the day to day because I'm just like caught up in like, oh, I should do this. Well, who said I should be anywhere? Mm-hmm. Which is a whole different story.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were so busy. It took us a few weeks to kind of make this happen. But like I said, I'm definitely a fan of yours. You've won me over. It's cool that you're starting to get, whether it's the followers, not that that's the only thing that matters, but it is reassurance that you're going in the right direction.
Yeah.
And people like Zach and whatever it may be. So next, roll out the red carpet, shamelessly, emphasis shameless, plug whatever you got to plug. Where can people get more of a Bill Miller training?
Yeah, so you can check me out on Instagram, Bill Miller Training, and on Twitter, it's at Bill Mills with an S at the end. And you can check out the books, Swing Fast and Throw Fast. You know, that I try to post as much as possible, but the one thing I do say about social media, I know I come across like I'm a super serious guy, but
not just a profile picture.
Yeah. Hopefully when this comes out, I'll have a new one. But no, I'm very open talking about training in DMs, especially with coaches that are serious. And I'm always down to chat about training. I don't have that big of an ego, really. I don't really care that much. It's just training. We'll be all right if we disagree, you know?
Just here to swing fast and throw fast.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, so I want to say thank you very much for your time, for sharing your stories, being very candid and whatnot. And I'm looking forward to chatting next.
Right on. Thanks so much, man.
You're very welcome. Very welcome.